From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The slowdown in the economy has hit individuals, families, companies, and even governments. Faced with budget shortfalls, some state governments are considering choices that will please no one. Cut education or health care or roads or release prisoners early. That's right. At least 8 states, including Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Kentucky, are considering releasing thousands of inmates ahead of schedule in hopes of saving billions of dollars. Joining us today to talk over the politics of early release are Adam Gelb. He's the director of the Public Safety Performance Project at the Pew Center on the States, and Khalid Shaw, director of Stop the Violence, Increase the Peace Foundation. That's a South Los Angeles anti-violence community-based organization. Welcome, gentlemen.
Greetings.
Hello.
So, Adam, the Pew Center recently did a report highlighting the huge prison population in the U.S., 1 in 100 adults in jail or prison. So how much of a strain does housing almost 1.4 million prisoners have on the state budgets?
It's put a tremendous strain for over the past 20 years, we've seen an increase of about 1 million people behind bars. 20 years ago, there were about 600,000. Now it's 1.6 million. And the budget's gone up about twice as fast as the number of inmates and has really started to crowd out spending on other priorities, education and health care, and particularly higher education, which is something we hear about frequently.
So if you take into account some of these potential early release programs, what kind of budget cuts or budget savings are states trying to achieve?
Well, there really is a gamut there. I mean, some states like California, where they're looking to release over 20,000 inmates, would achieve a sizable savings. Other states, smaller states like Rhode Island, are talking about much smaller numbers. The important thing here to realize, though, is that early release is a bit of a misleading term. And the fact is, if you look over sort of a 2-year or 3-year period, these folks are getting out. They're coming out, despite all of that building that we have done over the past 20 years. More than 97% of these guys get out, and that is the few who do stay in, the lifers, those with very long sentences who committed violent crimes or serious chronic criminals. That's not who any of these states are likely to be releasing. They realize that wouldn't make sense for public safety or politically otherwise. So if you look at a 2 or 3 year stretch of time, all these folks will be getting out anyway. The question becomes whether or not there's really any impact on public safety to let somebody out 90 days earlier. And it does certainly have some implications for who gets victimized and where. That can be very tough when you can see a situation where a crime has occurred that wouldn't have occurred if this person had been behind bars. But lots of studies have been done over this over the years, and there's just no evidence to show that the crime rate overall is impacted by people getting out a number of days or weeks earlier than they otherwise were scheduled to do so.
So, Khalid, you are really grassroots on the ground dealing with a community that, like many, just has to face the fact that violent crime is much higher than it wants. So when you think about your portion of Los Angeles and the folks that are in your service area, are people concerned about early release, or are they just concerned in general about what happens to prisoners when they get released?
Well, first I'd like to say that I also chair the Regional Violence Prevention Coalition. We cover San Bernardino, Riverside, Los Angeles counties, work with over 100 agencies in those areas. But in answer to your question, yes, people are concerned, and I think the response to that is predictable. When you talk about violence and crime, and the 6 o'clock news is usually a horror show for most folks in the community, and you're talking about letting 2,000 felons out on the street, predictably people are going to be concerned. But I'd just like to echo what was just said about the reality. These people are going to be released anyway, and I think the larger critical question as it relates to this piece is, what have we done as a society to make sure that when they're released, they're able to transition, become productive members of society? And I think that's the bigger question.
Well, along those lines, tomorrow the president is expected to sign into law the Second Chance Act, and it would provide $362 million for prisoner reentry services, including drug treatment, education, job training. Is that the kind of substantial investment you're looking for?
You know, it's interesting that you stated that. You know, we just here in the state of California signed a bill that is for $7.4 billion to build new prisons here in California. $300 million of that is the interest on that money. So, you know, as we talk about solutions, yeah, it's a step in the right direction. But at the end of the day, a little too late, you know, I think we need to start looking at having some real discussions around really looking at changing the systemic issues that get people involved in violence and crime, et cetera.
Adam, along those lines, Pew does a lot of research about where America is and where America is headed. And so when you look at this from a policy perspective, where do you think we should try to take this conversation over not just early release, but also over reentry in general?
Well, the conversation has really moved a tremendous distance over the past 5 years or so. And the notion that the President of the United States will sign a bill called the Second Chance Act tomorrow in itself is an incredible symbol of this. I mean, you have folks like Senator Sam Brownback, a very conservative senator from Kansas, along with representatives from represent inner city districts in Chicago and other cities around the country, coming together around a bill that essentially says we recognize that large numbers of offenders are coming back to our communities. We have not built our way out of the crime problem with additional prisons, and we need to do everything we can to help these people succeed when they come back to the communities, both for our own interests and the community's broader interest, as well as the offenders' interests themselves. And it is really quite an astonishing thing, and we're seeing that not just at the federal level. In fact, the federal level is a little bit behind some of the states on this. As you're probably aware, Texas, this past legislative session in 2007, passed a significant measure. They said no to as many as 8 new prisons and decided instead to build out a network of residential treatment centers for low-level offenders with drug problems. Kansas, again, passed a grant program to the counties to say, we don't want you to send these probation violators to our prisons and take up an expensive prison cell with folks who've broken the rules but not committed new crimes. Nevada has said if inmates complete programs behind the walls that are designed to reduce recidivism, like substance abuse and vocational literacy programs, that they can shave a little bit of time off their sentences. So
we're seeing
the country, we're seeing that kind of consensus develop across political lines that this is an issue that's got to be dealt with a different way.
But Khalid, when you talk about the day to day, right now,
right,
you know, before there are any new big changes, what are folks wanting on a community level when you have to make do with the systems that are in place now? What kinds of responses do you think people that you are dealing with would like to see?
Well, you know, just like everybody, folks just want to be safe. They want to feel safe in their communities. But I think the issues that we're dealing with are critically important because one of the things that has not happened as we talk about criminal justice system is the real stakeholders have not had a chance to get involved in the conversation around criminal justice, building prisons, and what we need to do to keep our young folks out of prison. I mean, it's deplorable to see that we've just passed the bill to build new prisons here in the state of California, and school teachers are being laid off as we speak. Medical centers are being closed down. The poor are being affected in a way that is just deplorable. So at the end of the day, I think that a conversation, more conversation needs to take place with real stakeholders. And when I say real stakeholders, I'm talking about folk in the community who live in those communities, sitting down with law enforcement, sitting down with folk who make policy, sitting down with the powers that be to frame the what the next step should look like as it relates to our criminal justice system. I think they need to be a part of that discussion, and that discussion doesn't need to be a political discussion. It needs to be a community discussion.
When you think about, and if you can, keep this brief, because I want to get both of you in before we wrap up. But, Khalid, when you think about this whole idea of the stakeholders, you're talking about real people who probably, like most of us, have someone connected to them who has been through the criminal justice system in some form. And how can we retain a certain amount of, I guess, compassion for people who are offenders but still make smart choices overall?
I think the way that's done is, you know, there's examples taking place in communities all around the country now. And I'm talking about building collaborations that include all of those stakeholders. When you have epidemiologists and you have law enforcement and you have real community stakeholders at the table.
Adam, just very quickly, who do you think needs to come to the table?
Well, I think Khalid just gave a good answer there. But in addition to that, and it need to be police, need to be victims, need to be prosecutors, need to be judges, the people at the front end of the criminal justice system.
Yes.
There are broad social and economic factors that have led in part to the United States crime rates and to how many people we have in prison. But fundamentally, the reason the population is as large as it is state policy decisions about who's going to prison and for how long. And so there are conversations that can be had at the policy level and are being had in places like Texas and Kansas and Nevada, as I mentioned, that are having a significant impact on the number of people behind the walls and on the level of community.
All right. Well, Adam and Khalid, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Adam Gelb is director of the Public Safety Performance Project at the Pew Center on the States, and Khalid Shaw is the director of the Stop the Violence, Increase the Peace Foundation. He joined us from our studios at NPR West.